Okay, welcome everybody to Discovery 2 Revision, we will have Kerry with us in a moment or two, but in the meantime I thought that we would do a little ITE spot quiz, just off the cuff, and see how you all go. So question one, which of the following IEEE standards describes Ethernet as a local area network technology? Is it A, 802.2, B, 802.3, C, 802.5, or D, 802.11?
D.
And that's correct. You said B and you are correct. Well done. Question two. Which of the following statements is a good justification for the use of a server-based network? A. The computers on the network should act as equal partners. B. All company data should be backed up to a central location daily. C. Individual users control their own resources. D. The network consists of seven users.
D.
And the correct answer was B, yes, that you should be backing up to a central location and that should be done daily. So if you do lose your data, you know, hopefully you're not, but you're not losing weeks and weeks and weeks worth of data. Well done. Okay. Question three. Let me see. Which two of the following technologies can best support servers that require high upstream speeds? Is it A, asymmetric DSL, B, cable modem service, C, ISDN, D, analog modem service, or E, VDSL?
E.
Okay, the... The correct answer was B, which was cable modem service. And the other answer that would have taken there is analog modem service. Yeah, they don't specify the type of speed, at least. Just the, you know, the classification there. Okay.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, so the Mexican games in the country, anything's a high speed, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you want to finish your quiz anyway, Geraldine, and then we'll get started. I'll get ranting.
Okay. What is the benefit of network services? A. Is it network services allow all users on a network to share expensive devices such as printers? B. Network services limit the number of tasks performed by computers? C. Network services reduce the overall amount of maintenance required? Or D. Network services improve data security?
Hey.
Yeah, you're all smarties, that's good. And I'll just give you one last question. What is the benefit of directory and name services on a network? Is it A, users can remember addresses as easily as names? B, to access a device, users must know both the name and physical location of the device? C, directory and name services enable users to access resources using server-friendly names? Or D, directory and name services decrease the flexibility of the network?
C.
Yeah, well done. Okay, over to you, Kerry.
Alrighty. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, even. Ooh, pardon me. And I've just had some very delicious beef rendang in about 6 minutes flat after talking about our potential next year students with up at the Information Centre. Today I decided that I'm a great believer in executive decisions, and I tend to make them quite regularly. We're going to do a rough recap of modules 1 through 6 because I get the feeling, and I'm quite happy for this to go on recording, I get the feeling that a whole lot of you really don't have a clue when it comes to Discovery 2, and everybody's sort of floundering around a bit there. And some people haven't even finished their labs for Discovery 1, but they will rename, CCNA 1, but they will remain nameless. So we're going to whiz over the first 5 or 6 chapters of Discovery 2 and talk about the things that they covered. And we will finish off the second half of Chapter 6 next week, Once Dean is back with us, he has no internet at the moment, which is why he's not helping us out. And, of course, we did Module 7 last week, just to keep things interesting. Now, before I get started, does anybody have any questions or issues that they want to raise before we start reviewing the previous content, or does anybody have anything they'd particularly like to talk about this lecture? Because I'm quite happy to sort of open these lectures up a bit more and make them more a free-form lecture. Because, of course, you've all read your notes, haven't you? Everybody's read through all the way to Chapter 6? Good. Yep, cool. Okay. No, but, I mean, you should have read through at least up to Chapter 7 so far. And whilst these courses do continue on into next year, it is already the end of October and time is ticking away. Lots of labs and worksheets for ITE, as Elise will testify, and lots of labs and things for discovery. And I am receiving some of those, and generally speaking, the work quality on those has been quite high. So has anybody got anything they want to ask before we start the revision, or any burning network question that they would like clarified?
I just wanted to say I thought last week's discussion on the domain names and MX records was good. I don't actually have any questions from it, but I thought that sort of stuff is good. If you wanted to talk about that again at some point, I'll go further with it at some point.
No, that's fine. Well, see, one of the things I'm trying to push for in Discovery, and we'll see how successful it is I'm trying to push the level of lecture more towards focusing on particular points in a module, given that the notes there do exist and there is a glossary, and I don't see the point of dragging my way laboriously through all of the notes every week from go to woe. I mean, if I'm going to do that, why would you read your notes? So I'm going to try and flesh out various points in the notes and explain things that may not be explained well by the notes, just to give everybody an idea of how these courses used to run. Ian used to give us 15 minutes of lecture per module. Which is certainly a lot less than what we have now. I'm not willing to take it back to 15 minutes per module, but I'd rather the lectures become a bit more student-focused and that they cover particular points that students may be struggling with in order that we can... I mean, obviously my wife is a bit biased. Somebody else said this too, but they said the notes are really boring. What we actually find interesting about CCNA is what Kerry has to talk about. So there we go, I'll just stick some more labels on myself. But what we would like to do is sort of make it, you know, enhance your understanding so that you come out of this with real knowledge rather than just with a knowledge of what's in the curriculum and perhaps how these things work in a real-world scenario. Okay, question. A MAC address has... A, 48 bits, B, 32 bits, C, 64 bits, or D, 96 bits?
48.
Excellent. All right, so I think we've only got the hardcorers on today, haven't we? Because everybody else is off for the Festival of Light.
Looks like it.
I don't think we've got anyone on who's actually going through Discovery 2 right now, to be honest.
No, I'd sort of come to that realisation myself. But we do have the lecture time allotted.
Yeah, we do have the lecture. Let's do Kerry's review lecture. I think that's a good idea.
We'll be the renter crowd.
What are you using, Chris?
Internal mic on the EVE. Sorry.
Oh my God! I've never heard you sound so disgusting.
I have. You're sitting next to me. No, just kidding.
I do that a lot. You should see me.
I thank the Lord that I can't. Okay.
I'm going to cut it out of the lecture once Kerry gets home, because it's just worth it.
You used to cut out everything except for me.
Okay, focus. Thank you. We would really appreciate it, and we may be able to provide you with something, but we would appreciate it if you brought in something decent as far as microphone is concerned, because that thing is horrendous. Really does sound horrible. For anybody who doesn't know, the microphone on an EEP is actually under the front panel, and you've basically got to pick the thing up by the front and sort of tip it up on a 45 degree angle and look like a complete dork talking under the front edge.
What a silly place to put a microphone.
Yeah, well, in the wind and the mini notes, they're actually in the top of the screen, sort of on either side of the web camera. So that's kind of a bit better. Okay, so I'll bring in another desk mic for next week, because, yeah, pretty bad.
You donate to Chris desk mic calls.
Yeah, I think so. We get them pretty cheap at the swap meet. They're about $9 for a little desk mic that works quite well, so we'll bring one of those in. And just because I was, and the Thursday chats are going to go up, I apologise profusely for Elisa's Thursday chat, which hasn't gone up yet. It's going to go up today. I know you thought it had never happened, but it will go up.
Good.
And and so will the one on Linux release cycles that we did yesterday. And Ubuntu is out. 8.10 is out.
We got a torrent for it yet?
Yes, I have. You just go to the download page, and then you click on the BitTorrent link, and off you go.
Cool.
Are you getting it down there?
I'm getting 8.10.
The server.
Server AMD X64 build. That's what I've pulled down here so far.
Okay. Oh, did you need that for those boxes in there?
Yeah. And I thought, I think you can actually do a distribution upgrade from the actual disk to save on a bit of network bandwidth.
Okay.
Alrighty. Okay, where to start? Alright, by this point we would have hoped that everybody has TerraTerm up and running and working, and if you don't, then get to it. We need you to be connecting to the remote bundle. Soon there will be remote bundles. I'm just about finished building the one in here at the association, and I think we've talked about what the remote bundle is. Essentially, it's a serial switch, and in remote bundle Mark II, it's actually going to be a serial switch and a VPN. Anybody tell me what VPN stands for?
Virtual Private Network.
Thank you, Miss Acronyms. What is it?
What, a virtual private network?
Yeah, it's all right if you don't know. Somebody else can answer it. But yeah, what is it actually?
It's a tunnel.
It is. It is tunneling encrypted data over the global internet, and it's the ability to connect two companies or two endpoints, but carry their data securely over the public internet, but have the data local to those organisations. And a lot of people would ask, why would you want to do that? You know, what is the point? Okay, here's an interesting scenario we can consider. You are sitting at the airport waiting for your plane, which has been delayed as usual, and takeoff is not for another 3 hours. But there is a Wi-Fi hotspot, and there is also your laptop, which of course is in your carry-on baggage. You fire up your laptop, you connect to the wireless access point, you check your internet email using POP3, and the hacker kid that's sitting three seats in front of you steals your password, nicks off with all your email, and then empties your internet banking account. Yeah, that sounds like a good scenario.
Oh, yeah, great.
Okay, so what a VPN allows you to do is it allows you to connect securely to another remote location, and it allows you to send traffic through public wireless hotspots and things so that the traffic will not be intercepted. Obviously, most internet banking sites do use encrypted HTTPS, so, I mean, that's a very extreme example. However, POP3 and IMAP do send data in the clear, and often that data does include passwords, and it is easy for people to get your email password, which is also often the same as your internet account management password. And that can be a little bit unfortunate.
Indeed.
Okay. Yeah, so we're going to have VPN access, so you can actually connect in and you'll be able to configure these wireless access points, which are WRT300Ns, and you'll actually be able to use your web browser on your computer to configure the wireless access points on the remote bundle. You'll be able to just connect a browser in and actually get into the web interfaces and configure them.
Mm-hmm.
There is some bad news, though. You're not going to be able to connect to anything on this network. They will be certainly segregated. The only thing you're going to be able to mess with is you're only going to be able to mess with the routers, switches, and virtual workstations that are connected to the remote bundle. You will not be able to talk to the rest of the association network. And we're going to some quite extraordinary lengths to make that a reality.
Fair enough.
Alrighty. Now, In Discovery 2 so far, we have discussed that a router is like a little computer. Can anybody tell me some of the components that a router should have in it?
Processor and memory.
Yeah, that's a good start.
Interfaces.
Interfaces, some pretty lights on the front to tell you that data's going through it, if you can see them, that is.
Actually, Cisco routers don't have lights on the front.
Oh, don't they?
They have a power light, but as far as I recollect, there are no specific interface level lights on Cisco routers.
Oh, there you go.
I'm told the 1700s have a couple, but often the rack mount gear, like the stuff sitting in the storeroom, doesn't have any lights because you can't see the back of it, and sometimes you can't see the front of it if the rack door's closed.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? Why bother putting lights in there if you're going to hide them away in a rack or a room where no one usually goes anyway?
Yeah, and obviously you're supposed to debug these routers with a console connection. So we have RAM, we have memory, we have network interfaces. Yep, they're all...
big D-Link logo on the top.
Well, your routers might have that.
They're the ones that don't work well.
Okay, what else should a router have? What else does Cisco routers certainly have?
Console port.
Software in them?
Yes, iOS. A console port, yes. I'm looking for one more component. Thank you. They've got to have flash memory to store. Well, can anybody tell me what is stored in flash memory?
iOS.
Yes, iOS. The Internet Operating System that Cisco routers run. And where is the configuration stored?
In VRAM.
Yes. Can anybody tell that Gemma's done CCNA 2?
Yay for Gemma.
You finished CCNA 2, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You knocked that over towards the end of last year.
No, this year.
Yeah. Okay. So, can anybody tell me what's generally on a home router? What sort of things do you find on a home router? Not a D-Link logo.
You find a switch on them?
Yes, there's a switch. Yep.
You find... too many family members chewing up your bandwidth, a la Dean.
Yes, there is that. So you've got a switch. What sort of things have they got? How do you connect them to your PCs?
Via.
They have a switch built in.
Via the RJ45 connectors.
That's what I was after.
Almost had a mental blank there.
Just because you say it's got a switch built in doesn't necessarily know that people might not necessarily know what you mean by a switch. It could be an on-off switch, and some of them have that too.
They do. And okay, if it's an ADSL router, you'll ask your customer, does it have a point that's a little bit smaller?
Yes, and that will be the phone connector, usually RJ12.
Yeah, RJ11. 12, is it?
Yeah, my understanding is that that's something that I've got to look up, because I always thought the 12 was the bigger one and the 11 was the smaller one, and I've had arguments with people over this.
Okay, we best should look it up. I thought it was 11, but anyway.
Yeah, look, I'm not 100% sure. I think there are 11 and 12 are definitely different sizes, and for example, one is the cable connector that goes from the handset to your T200R. Telstra cordless
and
RJ12 is the bigger one, but I'd actually have to check the actual jack sizes. I don't know where Mr. Wikipedia is when you need him, but we'll have to look that up and make sure we find out which one is which. But I can definitely tell you that 45 is the network port. What's another thing that a lot of home routers now often have?
A web interface.
I'm thinking more basic than that, but yes, they do have a web interface.
You're talking about the physical components?
I'm talking about a feature that they might have that everybody likes a lot.
Netting.
No. Rhymes with tireless.
Wireless. Oh, yes, they have the wireless.
Yes, and you'll note that a lot of people are allergic to blue and yellow and green Cat5 cables running around their houses. They find them disgusting. And they break up the fashion look of the place, and they won't have any of them.
So they have to put on the wireless.
Yes, so they have to put on the wireless. And then they find that double brick wall in the middle of their house isn't going to let the signal through, but that's another story. Ah, Dan's got his internet back. Okay. And what is one of the things that you have to make sure you do to your wireless, otherwise all of your neighbours are going to get free internet?
Make sure it's properly secured.
Exactly. So they're all things you've got to look at. Okay, so we talked about the basic components of routers. We talked about the fact that they run an iOS, or Internet Operating System, which is very expensive and written by Cisco. We spoke about the fact that routers have a console port. Can anybody tell me what is a console port when it's at home?
Allows you to connect directly to a device.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of port is that?
Serial. RS-232.
It certainly is. And so on one end of it, you've got an RJ45, and on the other end, you have often a 9-pin female or a 25-pin female connector, which will plug into a PC's serial port or USB to serial converter. Anyone apart from Gemma, tell me the communication settings you should use to talk to a console port on a router, by default Cisco router. All right. 9600. 8 data bits, no parity, and one stop bit. 9600, 8N1. And you'll be coming across that a fair bit. In fact, all of the bundle ports are set to run at that speed so that they can talk to the routers. Alright, we talked about that routers have serial interfaces. These are high-speed serial or low-speed serial. Those serial interfaces are usually designed to connect you to your internet service provider, such as if you're a company, the Ziz company, and you're connecting to your ISP, you would often have a serial link connected to a DTE, which would then connect to the ISP's DCE, and DTE being data terminal equipment and DCE being data communications equipment. And the clock rate is set by the DCE because the ISP is the one that wants to decide how fast the data is going to travel over that link.
Yep.
Okay, and you can actually get Cisco routers that do have ADSL ports on them. And you can get Cisco routers that have cable modem ports on them, but generally speaking, your ADSL 4-port Cisco router with wireless will set you back about $800, so most people don't tend to buy Cisco ones unless they've got a very good reason to do so. Alrighty. Now, when you connect to your ISP, you are usually connecting with a serial link, as previously stated. You need to know which serial cables you need to use, and luckily the remote bundle is all wired up for you. But there are actually standard connectors, and you need to know which is the DTE connector and which is the DCE connector. And the DCE connector is female. So the DTE has pins on it, and it's male, and the DCE is female. They're the V.35 serial connectors that you'll often see in ISP equipment. Now, one of the things that's worth keeping in mind here is usually there's a cable that runs from your router into this magic plug in the wall, and anything beyond that magic plug in the wall is your ISP's responsibility, not yours. And in certain scenarios, the ISP can often manage the router. But in other circumstances, you get the job of managing the router, so you get to configure it. Okay. What are some of the key attributes you might want to set on a router if you intend to use it?
Setting up static IP if you want that for your hosts on your private network.
I was thinking more basic things like the host name would be a good thing to set. Its default gateway, its DNS services, and its authentication methods to talk to its upstream provider. Okay. Now, most of the labs in Chapter 5, which a lot of people haven't done, deal with basic power up and powering down of routers. They deal with basic router configuration, changing the host names and stuff. And then it's once we get on to Chapter 6 that things get a little more complicated and interesting. We start talking about routing protocols, And can anybody give me an example of a routing protocol?
RIP.
Yep, RIP is one of them. You've also got things like IIGRP, EIGRP, BGP, OSPF, and that's enough of them. So you do get all different sorts of routing protocols, and they are responsible for keeping the routing tables in routers up to date. And the routing tables are the tables that are responsible for telling the router how and where to forward packets. Alrighty. Now, I'm just not sure what's worth covering. Oh, I was just going to actually put in an advert, and I'm actually going to put in a symlink on the website because I think it's so good. Have you listened to that Kerry Hoth Linux workshop MP3, Elise?
Is that the one you did at the end of ITE 2 last year, or the one you did where you installed it, or the one you did when you talked about Ed?
No, the one we did when... but was the Ed... I don't know whether Jim is still there. Is Ed the one in the Linux workshop, or is it the other one?
Oh, is there two different ones, is there?
Well, there might be.
That I can think of.
There's one that goes for about 2 hours, I know that much, and we start off by talking about initially what is Linux and stuff like that.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
It's in the Thursday Chats folder.
I shall just check my Thursday Chats folder and have a look.
Okay, so if you haven't listened to that one, it's definitely worth a listen. We talk about what Linux is, and we talk about, you know, how to talk to it and how to connect to the virtual machines and stuff like that. And if you don't listen to that, your ITE2 practical is going to be a very unhappy time indeed. Also, your CCNA stuff's going to be a bit unhappy because you will be using Linux on the remote bundle workstations. And the reason we have Linux on the remote bundle workstations is so that they are completely accessible to you. If we had Windows on the remote bundle workstations and you didn't have a lot of internet bandwidth, you wouldn't have a lot of fun remote accessing into them. You'd have to open up an RDP connection, and it would not be a lot of fun at all.
This is from last year, is it?
Yes, 2007.
Linux Instruction Workshop KerryHoth.mp3. Would that be the one?
Yeah, that's it.
It's funny though. I don't know why. I'll have a listen to it. I don't remember listening to it, but yes, and I'm sorry if I haven't, because I thought I'd actually listened to most, if not all, of the Thursday chats from last year. So there you go. Thank you.
Yeah, that's all right. Okay. What am I going to talk about? Okay, and we have all done the stuff on subnetting, so I'm not going to run that one into the ground. Anybody tell me the maximum number of hosts on a Class B network?
2 to the power of 16.
2 to the power of 16 minus 2, because the number of maximum hosts. The minus 2 being the two reserved addresses, the network address, which is at the bottom of the subnet space, and the broadcast address, which is at the top of the network address space. We will probably go over a revision of actual subnetting practices when more students are present, because it's a bit difficult to do that with only a couple of students present, especially not many of them that are going through Discovery. Okay. As I said, your initial labs will be powering up and down routers, and for that we have a remote power switch, which will allow you to turn devices on and off remotely. Very ghostly if you're sitting here, you just hear little clicks as people turn things on and off, and then things power up or down, as the case may be. And we also have routers, and we have two workstations per segment, and their Linux workstations. On the old pad, they will be Fedora. On the new one, they will be Ubuntu. So best have a tinker with Ubuntu. And as I've said before, it's possibly a good idea to be doing the practical lab with Ubuntu, because it's going to be a bit easier than doing it with Fedora. Although you are welcome to do it with either. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
You mentioned the base each machine, the actual file name of the virtual machine to unzip, I think. I remember seeing in your sample copy of the lab the other day.
Yes, and I'm going to put a lot more hints in the lab as to potentially which documents you should be looking at. So I get the feeling that if people can't follow those, then and they're not successful with the final exam, then that will be very unfortunate. Alrighty. Okay, so, and a lot of the, one of the interesting things we discovered from the Cisco conferences was, I don't know whether Jedma remembers going through CCNA2, but a lot of it concerned itself with London and Paris and Montreal and Birmingham and all these cities that were all across the world. And a lot of students who'd sort of come in from a home networking perspective didn't really find that very useful. So we've gone for more local names and stuff this time and shorter distances, so we're not sort of connecting the whole world together as such, which we believe has made it somewhat easier to understand. Oh, and how could I forget Gadsden? Sorry.
Gad, BHM and PHX.
Was PHX Phoenix or something?
Yep.
There we go. Okay. I'm just not sure what sort of things to sort of go through here, because a lot of it is really covered really, really, really well in the notes. Has anybody made use of the glossary that comes with the notes? I've actually found it quite good.
Yeah, it is really good.
Yeah, when you're arrowing through your notes and it says link Ethernet, you can actually hit enter on that link and it will actually bring up the glossary definition that Cisco has for Ethernet, which can be quite useful. Alrighty. I don't really want to go over the routing protocols at this particular point in time because I think I'm just going to confuse people. Is there anything else that people specifically want me to cover? Otherwise, I think I'm going to shorten up this lecture and just have an hour lecture rather than a two-hour lecture, because there doesn't seem to be too much to go through without sort of targeted queries.
No, I think I'm happy at the moment.
I thought Chris and Elise would want subnetting.
Well, I think Elise is...
almost done it to death. If you want to do subnetting, I guess we could do subnetting. It's up to you.
Well, I'm sort of thinking, and with all due respect, dear, I think we've sort of flogged subnetting to death in the previous lectures.
I can just keep working on it through the notes. But no, it's a good suggestion. No, I think for me, I just really want to get IT2 out the road, and then I'll come back and I'll sit there for the whole weekend if necessary until it works, until every bit of it makes sense. And the only way I'm going to do that is if I apply myself. Well, then Kerry said about everything he could possibly say to me about submitting.
I think I've got it sorted, but if I do need help, I'll be sure to contact you on Skype or something, Kerry.
I can hardly wait for that one. But yes, no, that's not a problem.
If it doesn't make sense, I'll just say, look, I've got this one issue here that doesn't work for me. Why? And I can come up and get you on, and you can talk me through that one issue.
Yeah, look, I think... one of the other key points I want to make here is, as we get on to the more advanced side of ITE and CCNA, it's very important as a student, and Elise certainly does it, Gemma certainly does it, quite a number of students do it, but it's very important to ask smart questions and targeted questions. I have lab 6.1.4 and it doesn't work. Well, that's good. I'm happy for you. But if you can be more specific about which bits don't work or exactly which bits you can't get to function, we can be a lot more specific about how we're going to help you. Even if the bit that doesn't work is step one, connect to the router. Tell us you're having trouble connecting to the router. That is more helpful than it doesn't work. Because historically there actually have been labs that don't work. In fact, in CCNA 1 and 2, there were labs that were completely broken. And they didn't work.
And there are a couple of labs that people are going to need to really, really think hard on. I think it might be lab 36 or 37. It was either the Telnet one or the FTP one in ITE too. That required a bit of creative thinking to get around it.
Absolutely. So certainly a challenge there. Yes, Chris's PDA is alive. Okay, yes, the labs work, the students don't. That's right. All right, well, look, I'm gonna leave it here for the moment because I'm going to have a much better idea of what's going to confuse people when people actually talk to me. We're still obtaining information on where students are up to. One of the other things, though, is if you have, for example, and I know some people certainly have, if some people have certainly found doing ITE 2 and CCNA at the same time a bit much work, do feedback to our fearless leader and mention that, because that sort of feedback can go into next year's course and we might be able to structure things somewhat differently.
Yeah, it sounds good. Well, I'll probably be here finishing up CCNA or Discovery next year anyway. ITE is what I came here to do, and ITE is almost done, so that's good for me anyway.
All right, everyone. Well, unless anybody has any other targeted questions or things they'd particularly like to know about while I'm sitting here, that will be approximately it for this week, I would think. I really can't stress enough that a lot of the older lectures and a lot of the things that are covered in a lot of the modules are definitely worth a listen. There are certainly people like Elise that do load their lectures onto portable players and listen to various lectures on things. There are lectures that do cover things like subnetting, and there are lectures that cover things like you know, network concepts and stuff. Of course, one of the questions I'm likely to get is, well, how am I supposed to know which lecture covers subnetting? My answer would be, well, match the lecture module number up with the module of the notes that cover subnetting, and you've got a pretty good chance that the lecture you download for, say, module 10 or whatever will in fact cover subnetting.
Yeah, I was about to make that point, actually. Get yourself familiar with at least the outline of the curriculum, what modules do what. And then you might say, oh, I'm going to have a subnetting day today, so I'm going to grab lecture 10 out of CCNA1. I'm going to grab lecture 8 or lecture 4 out of IT2, and I'm going to grab whatever, even the odd Thursday chat that's on the thing. So, and you say, right, that's my subnetting day.
Absolutely. All right, everybody, have a good one. We'll be available on Skype. I'm currently writing up documentation on the remote bundle and stuff. So unless anybody's got anything else they want to deal with at this particular point in time, that's it for this week.
Arrivederci.
That's it.